Okay, we're just about to start the class today. Good day to everybody. We're just going to do a sound check just to make sure everybody can hear. So if you can hear the sound, type in audio okay. And we're going to start in about 5 minutes. Once you can hear the audio, just type in audio okay. This way we can confirm that everybody is hearing the sound today. Type in audio okay. Type in the words audio okay once you hear the audio. We'll start the class in about 3 minutes. Michael, if you hear the audio, just type in audio okay. Michael in Wisconsin. Thank you. All right, Moshe, Ina from New York, just doing a sound check before we start the class. If you could all just type in the words audio okay, let us know that you can hear the audio. Thank you. All right, Mordechai Silver Spring, good to see you. Please type in the words audio okay and make sure that you have the sound working fine on your end. Ina from New York also. Good to see you, Ina. Hope everything is well. Okay, Ina, thank you very much. Michael in New Jersey, Michael in Wisconsin, do us a favor, just type in the words audio okay and make sure that you are picking up the audio fine. Long time to speak. If you can hear the audio, just type in the words, please. Audio okay, just to make sure that you can hear the class, Laura. Michal from New Jersey, Michael from Wisconsin, also. Just type in audio okay. If you'd like to start the class. BC and P. Ritera in Netherlands. Type in audio okay as well. Make sure that everybody's picking up the audio. Thank you. Okay, so let's begin the class. Hope everybody's doing well. Good Hanukkah to everybody. Right, so yesterday, we went through quite a number of questions on Hanukkah. We put the audio class online, so if you'd like to hear yesterday's class, you can go to our audio files link, and you'll see it. It's the first class underneath the Torah philosophy section in the middle of that page at the very top. So we're going to continue today, and we had a question left over from yesterday from Arnold. I guess once he comes on, we'll take up his question, so maybe we'll start with something else so he doesn't miss it. And as anybody, you know, as you log on, Hillary and Michael, just type in the words audio okay, just so we can monitor that everybody's hearing the class. And okay, so we'll pick up now from what we were talking yesterday. All right, so regarding Hanukkah, we went through, like I said, a number of questions. We left off with the machlokas, the argument between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Thank you, Michael. Hillary also in Jerusalem, if you could just type in the words audio okay. Okay, so what's the argument in the Gemara Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai? Because we have a custom today that when we light the Hanukkah in there, when we light the candles, we start on day one with one candle, and we ascend up one candle every day until on the eighth day we have eight candles. Okay, Hillary, thank you. So we ascend up one candle every day until the eighth day we have eight candles. But that's only Beis Hillel's view. Beis Shammai, the school of Shammai, they had a different opinion. They said that on day one you start with eight candles, and then day two, which is tonight, you'd go down to seven. Tomorrow it would be six, and you'd keep on descending until the last night you'd only be lighting one candle. So of course everything in the Gemara is based on principle, based on theory. So they don't just say this without any concept behind what they're discussing. So the Gemara asks the question, what is the reasoning for Beis Shammai, that he says start with eight and go down to one? And what is the concept of Beis Hillel, which is our custom, that we each night we increase one candle? So the Gemara gives a reason for both. According to Beis Shammai, who says that we decrease, starting with eight going down to one, he says they are to correspond to the days that are left in the holiday that we're entering into. Okay? That means to say that on the first night, we're just about to start the first out of 8 days. That means we still have 8 days remaining of the holiday. So what we are counting with the candles is the number of days left. Tonight, we completed one day, so there's only 7 days left, so therefore, according to Beis Shammai, we're going to light seven candles tonight, and tomorrow night, six. So he says, again, his reasoning, and again, this is just the facts of the reasoning. What our objective when we learn the Gemara, excuse me, is we have to unravel and decipher what is the underlying theory behind each one of the rabbis. So we only have the facts at this point that Beis Shammai says that the reason why we start with eight last night and then we go to seven tonight is because we are counting the number of days left of the holiday. Okay, what's Beis Hillel's view? Beis Hillel's view is that we're counting the number of days that are going out, that are passing, which is the converse of Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel is saying that last night we light one because only one day of the holiday is passing. Tonight we're going to light two candles because 2 days of the holidays have passed. So now the question comes up, what is their argument? What is the dispute over here? What does this mean with counting the number of days that have passed, according to Beis Hillel? Or according to Beis Shammai, no, we have to count the number of days remaining in the holiday. All right, so this is the question I'm putting out to you. This is the first question for today. And that's how the classes will, the basic format, and whatever you learn in yeshiva or anywhere, I mean, even the Gemara, you see, everything is written in terms of question, because the whole objective of learning is the person should stop and think for themselves, not just listen to what a rabbi says and just simply parrot and, you know, just mimic his actions. That's not learning. Learning is when a person understands with his own mind, and he thinks into the matter, and he can start sharpening his mind in the process. And by this manner, you start to give yourself the ability to develop a Talmudic analysis, And when you enter into new areas of Torah, or Gemara, or Chumash, whatever it is you're learning, so then you'll be more well-equipped to approach the area yourself. And that's what God really wants. That's why God gave each one of us an intelligence, and also the ability to strengthen the intelligence. Just like you use a muscle in your body a lot, it'll become stronger. So if a person uses their intelligence more, and thinks into matters more, their mind will become sharper. You're not born with a very sharp mind. It's something which has to be trained. So that's why the question is the most crucial element of any type of a discourse in Torah, any type of a study. So just to repeat the question again, the question is, why, according to Beis Shammai, are we counting down, meaning we're starting with 8, and each night we diminish one candle in order to state that there are that many candles left. So anytime I look at a menorah, I know that that's how many days are left. So tonight when I look at somebody's menorah, I see that there are 7 candles corresponding to 7 days left. Beis Hillel says, no, tonight you got to light 2, which is our custom. And that is to correspond to the number of days that have already passed. Yes, Alfred, I didn't see you online before, so that's why I saved your question to when you'd be online. So I have your question written down, and I have an answer for you regarding Kiddush and Havdalah. It was a very good question. I actually told it to my friend last night. And he goes, yep, that's a good question. So I looked it over, I looked through the sources, and I have an answer for you. Right now we're going to take up the question here. Okay, Shomer in Maine, good to see you. Alfred again, good to see you too. Okay. Gene, South Carolina, good to see you back. Welcome back. Okay, so everybody has the question. If everybody has the question clear, just type in the words, type in the just okay on your screen. This way I understand that everybody has a question. If you don't have the question clear, let me know. I'll repeat it. And Alfred will get to your question after this one. I'll take it next. Okay, thanks Shomer, thanks Alfred. Everybody else, just type in okay if you hear the question. If you don't, I'll be glad to repeat it. Michael, you got it? Rifki, Hillary? Okay, Ina, good. Is it Ina or Ina? How do I pronounce that? Don't want to mispronounce. Laura, I hope you get the question. Mordechai? Moish, you have a question? Okay, good. I see you put an okay, Moish. Very good. Shomer, you got it. Michael? Not clear? Yes. I'll repeat it again. The question is, what is the difference in the theories? What is the, meaning to say, what is the theory that propels Beis Shammai to say that what we should be counting is the days left in the holiday? Why is that his, what's his underlying reasoning that we must be counting the days of the holiday that are left? Meaning, tonight we're gonna light 7 candles according to Beis Shammai. We don't do it that way, but he did. So what was his theory? Why did he feel that that was what was important in terms of the mitzvah, the command of lighting candles? And we also want to understand Beis Hillel's principle. What's his theory that demands that he says we must count the days that have passed? I mean, each one seems to have a focal point as to what the objective or the principle of the lighting of the Nair is. See, we didn't get to this yesterday. We talked about that we're proclaiming the miracle, so on and so forth. But there's something about the miracle. Okay, Ina. Or Ina. Maybe I should use both, since you said either one is fine. Okay, good to see you, Brian from Canada. Okay, so you get the... Michael, you have the question, Michael. Meaning, what is the underlying principle that they're saying we must focus in on? And because of that principle, therefore, that's going to determine whether we count up in candles or count down. Are we counting the days left in the holiday, or are we counting the days past in the holiday? What's the argument? Okay, so let's take a few minutes and think about it. Michael, it's clear now? Exactly, Michael. Very good. What's the svara? What's the reasoning? There's got to be underlying definition. But now the question is, where do we look for the definition? I mean, we can just start guessing, or do what's the first step that we have to do in terms of approaching the answer? So having the right methodology in learning is crucial for arriving at the answer. So let's just elaborate a little bit, just since we're doing this, this is only the second class that we're doing online here. So let's, you know, let's talk out loud a bit. Meaning, we know what's the basic principle of Hanukkah. What are we trying to do in terms of Hanukkah? We're trying to proclaim the miracles that God did for us. Now, is there a broader category, perhaps, that this can fall into when we talk about God's miracles? What's the broader category of God doing miracles for us? Meaning to say, God doing miracles is one expression of X. What is X? Because both Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai are agreeing that we have to recount the holiday. I mean, the holiday essentially was that God enacted miracles and saved the Jews and brought us back to Judaism. The question that they're disputing, see, whenever you have an argument, there has to be a common ground. I can't say to somebody, you owe me $3. And he says back to me, no, the bricks in my house are really red. That's not an argument. There's no common ground. An argument must be something common. So if I say to him, you owe me $3, he says, no, I only owe you $1. So then at least the common ground is, what does he owe me? Then you have a common ground. Hillary, no, it's not. There's no dispute as to how many days the oil lasted. That everybody agrees. That's why we have eight. The number eight, you see, is equal to all of them. Right, that's something which both Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai agree. The eight is part of the mitzvah. The question is, do you start with eight? Do you end with eight? But nobody disputes the facts of the holiday. But just in terms of methodology, you have to have some sort of a common ground in order to have an argument between two people. So, if I say $3 is what you owe me and you say $1, all right, now we have an argument because we're arguing about something that the same point. The money owed is something everybody agrees to. I agree there's money owed, and he agrees there's money owed. Or he could say, I don't owe you anything. But still you have there is one point that we both are talking about. We are talking about the issue of monies that are owed to me. Now, if you're talking about an argument between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai about the number of candles, so what's the common ground between the two? Well, you could say in terms of the holiday itself, it's days. They're counting the number of days. The question is, how do you count the days? Yeah, but that itself is going to be based on, well, what do you mean? You're counting days for what reason? So they were more specific. They see, the Gemara is written that they hint to the answer, but they don't give it to you because, again, when they wrote the Gemara, they wrote it in such a revealing but yet cryptic fashion that there's just enough information for us to arrive at what they really mean. So that's why we have to think into it. So they're saying, according to Beis Shammai, we're counting the days that are still left, corresponding to the days that we still have left of the holiday. And Beis Hillel says, no, we have to count the days that have already passed. Now keep that in mind with what is the our objective goal with proclaiming the miracle. What are we trying to, when we talk about God does miracles, there's a broader category that God's miracles are part of. So if there's a category X, so then miracles would be part of that category. So what would we name category X? Hillary's asking, would it be an equal mitzvah either way? Yeah, Beis Shammai's students would follow Beis Shammai, and Beis Hillel would follow Beis Hillel. There's no, because when you follow what your rabbi is telling you, that is what you have to do. That's a pasuk in the Torah, al pi haTorah asher yaruha, in accordance with the Torah that they teach you, you should do. And you're not allowed to veer from what they say left or right. We actually quoted that yesterday. That's a quote from Devarim, Deuteronomy 17:11. But now let's think about what are they arguing on. So you guys tell me. You think about it, and then you tell me what you think. Am I counting the miracles that have passed already? Am I counting the miracles that have yet to come, so to speak. No, Alfred, I'm not asking about why God does miracles. I'm saying that what category would that fit into? I mean, just when God does miracles, that fits into a certain broader category. So what category would include miracles that God does? Is an example of what? Okay, Ina is suggesting that they're arguing over which is a greater demonstration of the miracles. Alright, Ina, you'd have to elaborate what you mean there. I'm not clear what you're saying. Well, sure, Alfred. You're writing that in the beginning. If you only had one candle, you wouldn't know by looking at the menorah that it's going to last for 8 days. Well, after 8 days, you'd have to see it. Unless what you're saying is that according to Beis Shammai, who counts down, then you must know from the first day that there's an 8-day holiday. Well, that's fine for the first day. But what happens on the 8th day when somebody passes your house and sees only one candle? Now they don't know just by looking at it, so it's not going to work. Hillary is saying that only Hashem can perform miracles. True, I mean that's true, but what is a miracle an example of? Are you saying, Hillary, that it's an example of God's work as opposed to something else? Okay, Michaela is suggesting like this. By counting the miracles already done, you don't assume miracles in the future? No, because we still know that there are days left. Okay, where Hillary is going, I like the approach. Hillary is basically saying that only Hashem can perform miracles. Meaning when we see miracles and we count the miracles, whether we're counting down or counting up, we're basically talking about that only God performed miracles. And that's the correct path. I'll elaborate. What I'm thinking and what Hillary is writing is that the objective of lighting the menorah is to be cognizant of God's miracles. Meaning to say the word I was looking for was really hashkacha, or providence. Meaning when we're lighting the menorah, what we're doing is we're proclaiming the miracles that God did for us. So we're trying to express that God has a relationship and he provides and he has a certain providence over the Jewish people. And that is something which is exemplified by the existence of a miracle. Okay, so when we light, what we're saying is that there is providence. And we're reminding ourselves of the providence that God expressed over the Jews back in the time of the temple where he saved us. Okay, that's what the miracle means. And we'll get to that in the end of the class, miracle versus nature. There's a very interesting Gemara in Hanukkah, which is more of a philosophical. But this is as well, because I mean the mitzvah itself, all mitzvahs have to be pointing to a certain philosophy. So what I think the idea is over here that Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai are arguing on, they both agree that we have to be recounting God's miracles, right? But the question is, what aspect of his miracles, but more general, what aspect of his providence, what element or what aspect of God's protection and involvement over the Jewish people is what we have to focus in on. So this was the question that Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai were arguing on. do we count, according to Beis Shammai, do we count the days that are left in a holiday? Meaning, tonight we're going to light seven candles because there's still 7 days left, meaning to say 7 days of miracles. Or, to put it in the definition that we're trying to, you know, ultimately reach here, Beis Shammai says you have to be cognizant of God's continued providence, meaning one day may be passed in a holiday, but we still have 7 days left. So therefore, light seven candles in order to demonstrate that there's still providence yet to come. Just like back then, the miracles lasted for 8 days, and we're mimicking what took place back then, so we're trying to mimic the very nature of God's providence. But what aspect of His providence? The aspect that it was continued. It's a continued type of relationship that God has with the Jewish people. How do I express that there's a continued relationship with my menorah? Oh, I light seven tonight. What does that tell me? That there's still seven more days left. There's still a future of providence. Meaning to say, I'm pointing to the idea that God's providence, God's hashkacha, God's involvement in our lives is a continual phenomena. Okay? Whereas Beis Hillel, which is our view, which is our custom, is that, no, we're counting the days that already passed. Meaning, why would we count the days that passed? I mean, Beis Shammai's view, it sounds like a very good theory. You want to count the fact that God is continuing the providence. Why would I not want to mention God's continued providence? That's a question. Why is Beis Hillel saying, no, we don't count God's continued providence? Tonight, there's a second night, we're lighting two candles tonight. Why? Like the Gemara says, they correspond to the days that have already passed. What element exists in the fact that God did the miracles already? Let me ask you that. What element exists in the fact that God, meaning to say, if I count the miracles that passed already during this holiday, so tonight I'm going to count two, because now 2 days are passing of Hanukkah. 2 days of God's providence have passed. Why do I want to count what has passed already? In contradistinction to Beis Shammai, who says, no, we have to count the future events that are yet to come, because this shows how we recognize and admit that God continues. The future is something which is a continuance of what He did today. So I want to talk about God's continued providence. Okay, so that can't be Beis Hillel, because Beis Hillel is not counting what's left. He's saying we count the days that have already passed. So therefore, that can't be the continued providence, but what element of providence is that? That's the question. Just type an okay in the window if everybody has the question, all right? And then we'll pause and everybody can think about it. Hillary, I don't know what you mean. Sorry for granted. Elaborate a bit. We don't take them for granted. We don't take them for granted. Not clear what you mean. Okay, Alfred, Moshe, Jean, thank you. What do you mean you don't take the miracles for granted, Hillary? Just expound it. Michal, you'll have to, I don't see how that relates here. We're looking for, you know, what is it we have to focus in over here in terms of what is the we already understand Beis Shammai. That's clear. But what's Beis Hillel? Just in and of itself, just, you know, remaining in the context of what we have here. Okay, Shomer. Okay, Ina, thank you. You see, Ina, I'm switching off with your name just to give you a little Hanukkah chuckle. So I hope you'll enjoy that. Okay, Hillary's response. Let's see. We don't take it for granted that there will be a continuance of the miracle tomorrow, so we light one candle at a time and count as we go along. Okay, I hear you. Good answer. We don't take for granted that the see, the thing is that we know that's a problem for Hanukkah, because we do know that it went for 8 days, so we know we're going to keep on lighting. So let's look for another another aspect. All right, Hillary, let's look for another aspect in just the days that have passed. Because you could still argue that, I mean, we actually know from the Torah, too, that God is never going to abandon his people. Yes, Amo lo Yazov, we say. His people he will not abandon. So it's true we don't rely on miracles in our life. We're not supposed to. Who says we're on the level? Even Yaakov and the forefathers, the greatest tzaddikim, did not rely on a level. Even when God told Shmuel to go anoint David, when God told Samuel to go anoint David as a new king, what did Samuel say to God? He says, well, because what happened was that Shaul, King Saul, didn't kill the Amalek king Agag. And because of that, you don't follow God, you cannot be the king. So it was removed from him. But he was always paranoid of David, and he chased after David to kill him. So now, Shmuel is being told by God, all right, Shaul is no longer fit to be king, you go find, and you're going to anoint another king. So Shmuel says to God, what do you mean I should go anoint another one? I mean, you know, Shaul, King Saul, is going to find out that he'll kill me. So that's an interesting response. I mean, why is Samuel, who is a prophet, and God is talking to him in that very conversation, in that very prophecy, God tells Samuel, you go ahead and anoint a new king. But Samuel doesn't say that because he's being sent on God's mission, that he's going to be protected. He says to God, well, Saul's going to find me and kill me. That is a very important point, because you see, people today, they feel that, you know, somebody who's on a high level, that's it, everything has worked out for him in miracles, and he has to worry about nothing. But you see, that's wrong, because if that was true, so Samuel, the prophet, would not have said to God, Shmuel would not have said to God that, you know, Shaul's going to kill me. He would have said, oh, well, since you're sending me right now on a mission, I don't have anything to worry about. But that is the wrong idea in life, because who says that you're not supposed to take the regular natural course of activity and precaution? So even if God speaks to you, and even if you're a Navi, you still are subject to the regular laws of nature, unless God decides to do something. You don't know if he will, but you can't assume he will. So I agree, Hillary, with your point that we don't assume the miracles, but we do know the Hanukkah, that there were 8 days. Okay, let me just take a quick look on screen. Okay, I see Ayana got a good laugh out of that. Alfred, I think every day is a new miracle and needs an additional candle, all right? Michael, each day that occurred in sequence is a greater miracle in itself. I don't know if it was greater. I just know that I think actually Rashi says in the Gemara that each day they use a little bit of the oil, which is very interesting. I mean, I was really bothered by that, because when they first found the oil, they knew that they won the war, and they were thankful, and then they took the oil. They had no idea until they started burning the oil that it was going to last 8 times longer than nature would demand that this oil live. So the Gemara says, Rashi says, that they took the canister of oil and they used only an eighth of it, or they used a little bit from it each day. So they probably thought that, listen, it's better that we light each day an eighth of a day, as opposed to just taking the whole one can right now and then burning it all up in one day. Because if we do that, then we're going to have 7 more days it takes until we press new oil. So it's better that we at least have the menorah lit a little bit each day. But they didn't know there was a miracle was going to happen until it did. But it was the same miracle every day, is what I was saying. Okay. But let me tell you what I'm thinking in terms of what... Does everybody have Beis Shammai's opinion? That Beis Shammai is saying we have to count the days yet to come, because he says the objective of Hanukkah is to recount God's continued providence. So, what do? We count the days left to come. That underlines the idea that there's continued hashkacha, there's continued providence that God has in our lives. So what's Beis Hillel's view? All right, so this is what Hillary was getting to, but I just want to enunciate it. And I'll say it like this, that the principle of Beis Hillel says that we count the days that passed, because what we're doing is we're trying to show our thanks. I mean, the element of thanks is what's important over here. The whole holiday of Hanukkah, according to Beis Hillel, it has to be permeated with the concept of thanks to God. So in order to show thanks, we can only talk about thanks for that which took place already. You can't thank God for a miracle that has yet to come. It's only once you are a beneficiary of God's kindness, then you can say thank you. Then it makes sense to say thank you for what you did. So according to Hillel, he says that we count the days that have passed because we have to underline the basic theme of Chanukah. And that basic theme is thanks to God for what he did. So how do we express our thanks to God for what he did? We count the days that have passed in order to show, oh, this is what God has done for us already. This he wants to embody in the lighting of the candle. So it ends up that the dispute between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai is, do we count the days coming in order to talk about God's continued providence, or no? Do we have to focus on the thankful aspect, and therefore we can only count the days that have already passed? Okay. If you all have that, type in an okay. If you have any questions, feel free to type in the question. But let's first just type in okay, make sure you see the distinction. Okay, Michael, Gene, good. All right, and I agree with your other statement, Hillary. Is that Hillary from Muncie and moved back to Yerushalayim? Okay, let's see what Laura. Laura's writing, God performed miracles. Laura writes like this: God performed miracles which appeared evident for all of us to see. The lasting of oil. Now it seems the miracles are hidden. Now it seems the miracles are hidden. Well, when a miracle happens to a person today, they'll know it. Alfred, good, thank you. That was clear. Okay, Hillary, somebody else. Sorry for the error. Okay, so now it's a very interesting thing that we see. Right, Moish, is it clear? Shomer, do you have it? Brian, Canada? Is it clear? Rifki, New York. And Tobia, in California. Just type in an OK if you have the points clear. I don't want to move on if what we said right now isn't clear. Moish, how's the sound quality today? I made some changes on the settings. Is the sound clear enough? Okay, I'll repeat the dispute and the answer again. Okay, what we're saying is the argument as to whether you count the days remaining, that's Beis Shammai, that's why he says the second night of Chanukah, you light seven candles because there's 7 days remaining. So there we said the reasoning is because Chanukah embodies the concept of the miracle. Miracle means God's direct involvement in the Jews, in the life of the Jews. Thanks, Moish. By the way, everybody should be thankful to Moshe, who's with us today, who helped put this whole thing together. So it could not have been done without his persistence and his help. So we give a big yashar koach, a big thanks to Moshe for helping us put together this whole online classes. Okay, so just to repeat, so again, the main, you always have to focus in and keep in mind what are the main concepts of Chanukah. Recounting God's miracles, meaning God's providence. So Beis Shammai says, since that's the theme of Chanukah, so when we light these candles, we want to make reference to the providence that has yet to come. So tonight we're lighting 7 candles because there are 7 days yet to come. We still have 7 days left starting tonight. So his principle is we must underline providence of God, just like Beis Hillel says, we have to talk about the God's providence, that he's involved in miracles in our life. But what aspect of the providence? That's the question that they're disputing. So according to Beis Shammai, he says that we're talking about that God continues his providence. How do we embody that? We show, look, there's 7 days left tonight. I know for a fact that God will continue his providence, and I'm going to display that by lighting 7 candles tonight. Even though tonight's only the second night, but I know that there were 7 more days. There was a continuation of God's providence over the Jews back then. That's what I want to underline, that God has the continued providence over the Jews. All right. People are saying the sound is not as clear today as it was yesterday. Sound was better yesterday. Okay, I mean, are the words intelligible? A couple of you are writing that the sound is not as clear today, but do you understand the words, though? We'll have to see if we have to change a setting or something. But let me know if it's at least intelligible. So again, the point is that Beis Shammai is saying we have to talk about God's continued providence. Beis Hillel is saying that we talk about the providence that already took place. So there are 2 days that passed. Okay, all right, so we'll have to work it out, Alfred and Shomer. We'll have to see what the setting, we changed it a bit. Okay, so that was Beis Hillel. Hey, listen, maybe it's just my voice that got raspy today, and it's not the computer system. So we don't know what the story is here, but we'll check into the settings anyway, just in case. All right. So that takes care of this dispute. Everything clear to everybody? Tobia in California, what are you referring to when you say you now understand the lighting of the 7 candles? You mean the 7 remaining candles on Hanukkah, or the 7 candles in the temple every day of the year? You know, let me ask Moshe a question. Moshe, is it possible for me to go into the controls right now without disturbing the class and change the sound setting, or is that going to, I should wait until the next class? What do you say, Moshe? Okay, Brian, thank you. Hillary, thank you. Okay, Larry, good to see you today. I'm going to wait to see what Moshe says about the sound setting to see if we can clarify it a bit. I know we definitely can clarify it. The question is whether we should do it midstream in the middle of the class. Mish, you still there? Let's see if he types this in. Alfred, California. Okay, good. You see both sides? Shaman never seems to win. Winning is not winning in Judaism. Winning is when you see an idea clear. Mish. Okay, he says it's not possible to change the sound setting without disconnecting the session. Try repositioning the microphone. It is raspy. Okay. Maybe this is a little bit clearer. Okay, Alfred. You know, let me just see. There's actually a fan that's blowing in here. Maybe that's causing some static. Hold on. Take care of the sound setting is another point. Okay, next question was Alfred's question from yesterday. Right? That was the question regarding Let me just see. Right. Alfred had a question yesterday like this. Very good question. Because there's a law regarding... okay, Tovia, thank you. If it gets better, let me know. You can type better on the screen. I just tried to minimize the ambient sound in the room. Okay, so the question we had yesterday was like this. There's a law that, if, let's say a person is traveling, and he goes to stay by some friends for a couple of days in Hanukkah. So what he has to do, and this is a case where he's, let's say he's an individual, single person, so he has nobody back at his house that's lighting on his behalf. So therefore, what he does is he gives some money to the head of the household, and he buys some of the oil. And then the head of the household will increase the amount of oil to cover this guy as well. Now, the question that Alfred asked is a very good question. Why is it that on Shabbos, I can also be a guest at somebody's house, and when he makes Kiddush for me, he picks up the wine. Larry in New Jersey says, I'm hearing everything twice with a 5-second delay. Anybody else having that problem? Anybody hearing everything twice? Larry, you might want to turn... I'm not sure how this would work. I'm not sure why you're hearing it twice. Anybody else hearing it twice? Make sure the sound is okay. I guess nobody else does because nobody else mentioned that. I'm not sure what the issue is, Larry. Maybe you want to exit the room and come back in. Nobody else is having a problem. All right. Larry, try... I don't want to repeat myself because you probably heard it twice already. No pun intended. But you try leaving this... leave the chat room, come back in, and maybe that'll correct the error. Check your connections too. Okay, so the question is like this. Why is it by Hanukkah? I'm a guest at somebody's house. I have nobody else lighting for me at home. And if I want to partake of this Hanukkah lights at my host's home, I have to give him some money. It's not a lot, just give him some money. But in the same case where I go to a friend's house, let's say for Shabbos, and he's going to make Kiddush, he could make Kiddush for me and have me in mind and fulfill my obligation. But in that case, I don't have to give him any money. So the question is, why is there a discrepancy? How do we explain that by Hanukkah I must give money for him to fulfill my obligation? It seems like the same thing. In both cases, somebody is taking care of my obligation. So how is it that by Hanukkah I have to give money to become part of that substance of oil, but by Kiddush on Shabbos I don't have to give any money? He could just make Kiddush and have me in mind. Okay, so I'll put that question out to you. But in order to answer this question, you're going to have to very clearly define the difference between the nature of the mitzvah of Hanukkah and the nature of the mitzvah of Kiddush. That's going to have to be a first step. Okay, so if you really want to approach this, let's see what you're writing. Hillary's writing, you are not supposed to be Mechal Shabbos. Of course you can't be Mechal Shabbos. What does that have to do with this? You give him the money before Shabbos. Oh, that you mean to say to give him money on Shabbos. So give him the money before it. Buy half his bottle of wine before Shabbos then. But it doesn't say you have to do that. So what is the difference in the nature of the mitzvah of Kiddush and in the nature of the mitzvah of the Hanukkah menorah? By the way, let me ask you a question, Alfred. So this was Alfred's question. Alfred, if I come to your house on Sukkos, can I give you 30 bucks and you will shake the lulav for me? All right, there's a question to Alfred, but anybody can answer that if you want. What would you say, Al? Would you say that I can give you money and buy half of your lulav and you'll shake it for me and I don't have to shake it anymore? can I give you $200 and you put on your tefillin and have me in mind? I don't have to put on my tefillin today because I gave you $200 and I just bought half of the worth of your tefillin. Correct. That does not work. But it works by Hanukkah. You have to give money. And but the case of Kiddush, you don't even have to give money. But now you have to think about the nature of mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are, again, keep in mind that God designed the entire Torah system. So there's going to be a tremendous amount of wisdom we're going to be able to uncover if we're fortunate. And we'll see how the Torah is structured and how one mitzvah is different than another. And what's the difference between a mitzvah or a chok or a mishpat? There's many different types of mitzvahs, commands. You're right, Alfred. Right, you have to do it yourself if you're able, of course. Right, Shomer is writing, we have a command to be there to participate. Okay, you have to participate. Yes, I see there's a difference, but the reason escapes me, okay? Shomer is writing, each man, right, to do for himself. Okay. We have a command to be there to participate. Each man has to do it for himself. Our heart is what is important. Yes, but that doesn't explain the difference between... I'm directing you to where the answer is. The answer is going to lie... You have to stop and think also. Don't just give an answer, you know, the first thing that comes to mind. Be critical on your own thoughts. You have to think. Sometimes it takes a long time to come up to an answer, if we're lucky. But you have to think. I'm telling you, the area that you're going to find the answer here is the distinction in the nature between Kiddush on Shabbos, sanctifying Shabbos over a glass of wine, all right, and between the nature of the mitzvah of lighting candles on Hanukkah. Think into it a bit. What is the difference in the nature, the very nature of the mitzvah, the formulation? Just think factually, what are you doing in each case? And then see if you can unravel a bit the nature of the mitzvah. Everybody has a question clear? Just type okay. Again, why do you have to give money to your host for him to have you taken care of your obligation by the Hanukkah menorah, but you don't have to give him a cent, and he'll take care of you for Kiddush. That's all right. Alfred is saying, Hillary is saying the mitzvah is more important. I don't know what you mean, Hillary. I mean, the mitzvah is more important. Which mitzvah? I mean, both of them are mitzvahs. Alfred writes, one is physical and the other is spiritual. They're both physical. You have a physical substance of wine, a physical substance of lights. Which one is spiritual? I mean, elaborate. See, the truth is also, you could say your own Kiddush if you want, and you could use his wine. See, that's just, there's a mechanism. There's a mechanism by which, for example, somebody says a bracha, like Hamotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz. You go to somebody's house, they make Kiddush, or you're just having a meal with them, he could say the bracha of Hamotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz, the blessing over bread, have you in mind, and you just say Amen, and you could eat. You don't need to say the bracha if he had your obligation in his mind when he said it. How does that work? Well, the truth is, Alfred, I mean, Hanukkah was to save Judaism. Right? I mean, I could argue that Shabbos is a physical restrictions. I am not going to let you off that easy, Alfred. We want definitions here. Okay, so formulate it. But I wouldn't go that route. But answer my question now. Let me give you a... okay, Michael. Don't think there's going to be class tomorrow, Michael, but check the schedule on the regular page of the live classes link. You'll check over there the schedule. We may do something on Sunday. I don't think, we'll see. Check it in the morning to see if there's anything posted for tomorrow or for Friday. I think Sunday would probably be the next day. But let's get back to the question. How can it work that when a person says Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz, he says the prayer over bread, the blessing over bread, all I have to do is say Amen and I can eat? How does that work? What's the mechanism? See, the mechanism over there, the Gemara says, is called Shomea Keona. One who answers is as if he answers himself. Meaning, if you listen and you answer, is as if you fulfilled the blessing. Because, let me ask you a question. What is the objective in saying a blessing over food? What are you doing when you're saying a blessing over food? Basically, you're saying that this is God's creation, and He creates this, and I can't eat from this world, I can't have any pleasure from this world without praising God for it. I have to recognize that otherwise, the Gemara says, it's called stealing. So you can't do it. So I have to make a blessing. Now, if you make a blessing, and then I say afterwards the word Amen, which means it's true, I agree with what you said, so then my saying of the word Amen is equal to as if I made the blessing myself. See, all that's required for a person to eat is to make the statement, right, to have the concept and agree to the concept. That this is, the concept of the blessing, that God created this, that God is the creator of the food of the world. Once I am cognizant of that, now I can eat. Right? It's not a matter of, it's a thankful thing, Alfred, but it's more in terms of reminding ourselves. We don't say the words thank you when we say a blessing on food. Interesting. What the words are is that blessed are you, our God, King of the world, who created the fruit of the tree. So what we're doing is we're making a statement. And we are agreeing, we're testifying to the fact that God is the creator of this food. At that point, now the rabbi said that you can eat it. Before that point, you can't eat it. Then it's like stealing. Once you've made that point, now you understand where the good is coming from. So you have the right concept of who is benefiting you in life. After you eat, then you say words of thanks, because now there's a separate thing. After eating, there's something called satisfaction. Satisfaction is something which demands thanking. So it's funny that the Gemara says, where do we learn out from the, because everything is written in the Torah in terms of our commands. So where does it say in the Torah that you have to bless after you eat? It says that you'll eat and you'll be satisfied and then you'll bless. Oh, so only when you're satisfied, which is how we hold. We hold that only when you eat enough, which is an olive bulk measure, when you eat that quantity, then you say a bracha afterwards, the bracha of thanks after you eat. That's for a bracha for satisfaction. The bracha you say before you eat is not for satisfaction. It's a blessing for recognizing where this food came from, recognizing our supply. Right, Shomer? Right. Now afterwards, you say satisfaction. You say you're satisfied, so you say a blessing over your satisfaction. That feeling of being full is a very important thing. So you bless God for having that feeling that you're not hungry. So the Gemara says, now where's the, how do you know you're supposed to say a blessing before you eat? I understand the Torah says you should eat, you should be satisfied, and you should bless God. Fine. But it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that you should bless before you eat. So why do we make a blessing before we eat? It's not written in the Torah. So the answer is, the Gemara says like this, if, as the Torah writes, when you're full, you should thank God, you should give a blessing to God. Certainly before you eat, when you have hunger pains, you should bless God. So they make an a fortiori argument, that's what it's called, from the weaker to the stronger. So that's how they learn out, you say a blessing before. So the blessing before is really recognition, and the blessing afterwards is satisfaction. Okay, so now, let's get back to our question. No, we don't make the food holy, Laura. That's not true. We praise God for the fact that He created it before we eat, and then after we're full, we thank Him for having that feeling of satisfaction. So now, but it's not making the food any more or less holy. That's not accurate. Okay, so now, the. By the way, is the sound improved now or not? Does it sound any better now that I lowered that fan over there? Now, getting back to our question, all right, Alfred's question. So why is it that... So how does it work? What is the structure of the blessing of Kiddush over wine? So when you make Kiddush over wine on a holiday night or Shabbos night, so what you're doing is you're stating that God has created Shabbos. And the 6 days of creation, you're making a statement. Now, I don't have to make that statement. If I hear somebody else making that statement and I say I agree, that is equivalent to making it myself. All that is necessary... Okay, okay. Toby is saying the sound is better. Better for Alfred, too. Better for Brian. Great. Okay, so I guess it was the fan noise. Okay, so the statement of saying Amen after somebody else makes the prayer, that means that that's sufficient. I am now making it, it's equivalent. So I don't have to say the prayer myself. Somebody else can say the blessing myself. Somebody else can say the blessing. And when they say the blessing and then I say I agree to that sentiment, so then I could eat. I don't have to do anything else. So therefore, we define the nature. See, I was asking you to tell me the difference between the nature of Kiddush and the nature of Hanukkah, meaning the mitzvahs. So we just define the nature of Kiddush. The nature of Kiddush is just like any other blessing. It is a recital. It's a verbalization. You're testifying to a truth. Okay, so since that's the nature, money plays no role. Where's money going to fit in? Reciting a truth is not something which is subject to whether a person has money or doesn't have money. All right? So, I can bring my own wine, I can drink his wine. Whose wine you're drinking is irrelevant. The fact is that the mitzvah, the command to say the blessing over the wine, is a mitzvah. The nature of the mitzvah is a recital. I mean, you're giving testimony. Okay? That's one type of a mitzvah. You're giving testimony. Whereas by Chanukah, or by Lulav, or by Tefillin, see, that's a mitzvah that you have to do yourself. There's something called a mitzvah begufo, a mitzvah that you must do with your own body. Then it's not possible that somebody else could do it for you. I can't say, hey, you be a messenger for me today, and you put on Tefillin for me. That's not going to work, because I have the obligation to do it with my own body. So there's no way out. I must do it with my own body. Okay, but you can't say that's why I can't tell somebody, here's my tefillin, you put it on yourself and have me in mind. That doesn't work. It sounds funny, but it's not something which can be performed if you're not using your own body. Okay, having children, procreation. I can't tell my friend, have children with your wife and have me in mind. It's not going to work. That's a mitzvah you must do. It's a command you must do with your own self. So you start to see now there are different categories of mitzvahs. Now what about Chanukah? It seems over here that Chanukah is not of either one, because you don't have to light physically, but it has to be your money. It has to be your money, meaning, and I looked up in the Halacha, in the Mishnah Berurah, Alfred, in the Shulchan Aruch, the law, and it says that it's even preferable when you're a guest to light your own. So you see that doesn't. What you're basically doing is you're now buying the oil, and you're saying it still has to be your oil. You still have to facilitate the mitzvah. I mean, we can go further with it. Like, why is it that I don't have to do the physical lighting, but I have to use the oil? The oil has to be mine, meaning it has to be something which I am responsible for. So it's an interesting type of a mitzvah, because on the one hand you have the mitzvahs that are you must do with your body, and there's no way out. On the other hand, there's mitzvahs that you can have somebody else do for you. So, for example, when somebody gives a divorce to his wife, so he can give the get, he can give the Jewish divorce to somebody else, and say, bring it to my wife and give it to her. Because the giving of the get is really when the divorce takes hold. So I don't have to do it myself. That can be done through a messenger. I'm wondering out loud if that's the same case over here by Chanukah. I go to the guy's house, and I'm letting him be a messenger for me. Because you see, you have a principle in Jewish law where you can have a messenger. It's called Shliach Adam Kamoso. The messenger of a person is like himself. Okay, Hillary, be well. Glad you could join us. So you have a principle that the messenger of a person is like themselves. So, but that only applies in certain cases. I'm wondering if that's how it works by Hanukkah. Well, I have to think about it. But I'm just trying to show you that Hanukkah is not like Kiddush, to answer your question, Alfred. Hanukkah is not like Kiddush in that you can achieve the mitzvah just by listening to the words. Because it's not a mitzvah of recital. Hanukkah is not a testimony. If it was, then you'd be able to just let him say the prayers and that's it. But it's not. It's a mitzvah to do an active demonstration. That requires a certain amount of oil and flame. So that's something which is a substance involved. The real mitzvah of Kiddush is not the drinking of the wine. I mean, that's part, but it's really it's testimony. You're doing it over wine because you want to show the importance. So wine is really secondary by Kiddush. The real importance by Kiddush is the testimony that you give to God. You do it over wine because now you want to show that it's an important thing. Okay, but in terms of the Hanukkah, that's not an active testimony, that's an act of lighting. So there, since it doesn't come under the category of verbalization, so therefore it doesn't matter that I just hear his words. That's not the essence of the mitzvah. You have to partake of the essence of the mitzvah. So the essence of the mitzvah is the major. You're responsible for this oil and for igniting these lights. How are you responsible? Then you have to give him some money. Now it's part ownership. Now you've got some ownership in the object. Now it's your oil. Okay? So it's really it's a halacha that is primarily an act of not testimony, but something in terms of a substance. There's a substance here, an activity. See, the activity you don't have to do. He can light for you. But it's that you somehow must facilitate the lighting of the candles. And just merely saying the words Amen after he says a bracha, that doesn't facilitate the lighting of the candles. No, I have to somehow be responsible for the substance that's being performed over here. Okay, tell me if it's clear, everybody. Not sure, Alfred, it's like a kumvase. Not sure about that. But do you hear the distinction I'm making? And I think it answers your question. Okay, Brian in Canada, thanks. Oh, Brian must have really liked that one. I got two S's in that yes. Okay. I got a good job there today. Okay, Alfred Good, Ayan Amosh, Laura Shomer, Jean, let me know if it's clear. Everybody else? Just type in OK so I know it's clear. Okay, Ina, thank you. Jean, thank you. Alright, so now let's move on to the next question. We have two more questions left. Next question is philosophical. It's a Gemara. It's a very brief. Just a statement of Rav Huna. Okay, Shomer, I'm glad you see it. So it shows us something. When we see ideas unravel like this, it just encourages us to the conviction that there's such a great amount of knowledge out there. And when we do the mitzvahs, after we understand the ideas, now we have more of an appreciation. Now we're doing something which makes sense to our mind. That's really what mitzvah is, to do something which makes sense to your mind. That our lives should be guided by reason. I mean, as opposed to other religions that are just blind faith, or there's no concepts behind it. I mean, God gave one religion, that's it. There was only one mass revelation. Okay, next question is like this. Gemara says, quoting Rav Huna, he says that if a person is careful with the Ner Chanukah, and Rashi also says with the Ner Shabbos, then you'll have children. I mean, if you're careful to light your Chanukah Neros properly at the right time, and you're also careful to light your Shabbos lights carefully at the right time, so then you will have children that are great Chachamim, that they are wise people. Okay, what's the question? What is the question? What does it mean that if I'm careful with my my lights for Shabbos, and I'm, you know, I do it right on time, I do it every Shabbos, and I'm also very careful to light my Chanukah lights at the right time, that that will produce in me children that are wise? So what's the question you have to ask? Keep in mind, the next class we'll do, unless I, you know, we schedule something else, will be Sunday at 1:30. Sunday at 1:30 will be the next class we'll do. That's 1:30 New York time. But what's the question you have to ask on the statement of Rav Huna? If you're careful with your Shabbos and your Chanukah lights, then you will have children that are chachamim. They'll be wise. Exactly, Alfred. What does lighting candles have to do with smart children? What's the relationship? What is that? Why are these? I mean, why can I say if I'm careful? I mean, are these hard mitzvahs? Is it hard to light? It takes 2 seconds to light an air. It takes, it's a very brief, it costs very little, and you're done very quickly. Why don't you tell me like this? Whoever is careful to observe all 8 days of Pesach, not eating any chametz, then they'll have wise children. No, it doesn't say it by that. And that's a much more difficult thing, to really be conscious not to eat bread and to change your whole eating habits. I mean, tell me, or a person who's very careful to give a lot of tzedakah, you're really supposed to give 20%. That's the real proper way to give. The average is 10%. That's what most people do. But the Shulchan Aruch, the Torah says that the right level is to give 20%. Yeah, after taxes, of course. 20% of your income is supposed to go to tzedakah. No, Laura, you have to light today. The Chanukah lights we light today at sundown, at sunset. Shabbos we have to light 18 minutes before. So, Gene, if your children are going to be like you, how does that show any type of wisdom? How do you telling me the children are going to be like you because you lit the candles? Well, why can't you say if you study a lot of Torah, you'll have wise children? That seems to be more in line. That makes more sense to me. If a person studies Torah 9 hours a day, which is what the Rambam's Maimonides prescription is, 9 hours a day of learning, a man's obligation, right? And then work 3 hours, and then whatever else has to be done during the day, sleeping is 8 hours. He has a whole order. Why don't I say that if a person learns 9 hours a day, then he's got children that will be wise? Why do wise children emanate from somebody who is careful with the Shabbos lights and from the Chanukah lights? This is the kasha. This is the question. So what we're doing now is, like Alfred pointed out, what's the relationship between the two? Gene, what do you mean, Tanis, 5 and 6, 5 to 6? But let me just tell you what you have to do at this point, in terms of method. What you have to do now is individually define what exactly are the Shabbos lights about, and what exactly are the Hanukkah lights about. Once you can define each one, then perhaps it'll open up a path to the answer. So that has to be the first step. I can give you a lot of things that Shomer is writing orderliness, but I can think of a lot of things that have orderliness. What about doing the Passover Seder? I mean, Seder, the word Seder means order. Think about the definition of each one. Everybody has a question? Type of, okay. Just make sure everybody has a question. I mean, if a man lives alone, he has to light the lights as well. The reason for lighting the Shabbos lights is that there should be peace in the house. Because if there's no light in the house, then there could be quarrel. The husband asks the wife to pass the salt. She doesn't see so well because there's no light, so she passes the sugar. It ruins the meal, and it creates a certain amount of friction. So having lights is part of the Oneg Shabbos, the enjoyment of Shabbos. Oneg means enjoyment. So the reason why we have lights in Shabbos is in order that it creates more of a peaceful environment than Shabbos. Shabbos should be a peaceful day. Right, so it has nothing to do with Shomer. It's not dealing with creation. It's not dealing with the creative, but I can't say you're totally wrong. There is an element of that, because Shabbos is about creation. See, Shabbos is definitely about the day, about creation. And lighting the candles is that this day should be most pleasant. I mean, the day where we recall God's creation. Every seventh day, it's such an important thing that we recall the concept that God is the creator. Therefore, we have the whole day of Shabbos to mimic what God did, that He did. He actively withdrew from any type of creativity. So just like God did that, we also actively withdraw from any type of creativity. So if we define Shabbos as a day of creation, how would you define Hanukkah? Hanukkah doesn't celebrate creation, it celebrates what? What was the dispute we had earlier between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai? They were arguing on what topic? Resanctification, right? But what do we celebrate, Brian? What does the 8 represent on Hanukkah? What is the 8? What is the focal point of Hanukkah? Providence. Good. I know. Good, Gene. Providence. Exactly. The miracle. Right? The miracle. The miracles that God did. So now we're saying that Hanukkah is about providence in the form of miracles. And Shabbos is about creation. So in the Gemara, like Rabbi Huna says, if a person is careful with the Ner Shabbos, that's dealing with creation, and a person is also careful with the nair of Hanukkah, which is Nes, then he's going to have wise children. Now let's see if we can put this together. What is creation and what is Nes? They're two examples of what? That's correct, Laura. We like to acknowledge God's miracle of the oil and saving us Jews. Primarily, essentially, it is Nes. It is miracle is what Hanukkah focuses on. Shabbos focuses on creation. So you have creation and you have miracle. What are those two examples of? Alfred, exactly. God's power. Meaning, there's two realms in which God relates. God relates to the world naturally, what we call Hashgachas Klalius, where God creates the laws of nature. That's what creation is. We talk about how God created the world and it works in a natural fashion. But then there's also where God steps in and he suspends those very laws of nature, where five men could wipe out tens of thousands of Greeks, where a can of oil that only has a quantity to last one day lasts 8 days, and all the other miracles that we read of in the Torah. So you see that Hanukkah and Shabbos together give us a full picture of both ways that God relates to the world. He relates to the world in terms of the Creator, and then there's also the suspension of those laws at certain times. Right? So he builds into creation the ability for certain things to be, certain laws to be suspended. So that's very clear now. Now we understand what is the common ground. What is the shared idea that we glean from Shabbos and Hanukkah? It's the full picture of how God relates to the world. He relates in both the natural, in terms of a creator. He also relates in terms of the unnatural, where he causes suspension of those very created laws. So why is it that if I have these two concepts, my children will become wise? Now you answer me. You should be able to answer this now. Let me see what you want to say. Very amusing, Alfred. Having children is natural. Smart ones are miracles. See, the thing is, let me give you another minute to respond before I give you my suggestion. Good, Ina. Exactly. Definition of wise. What's the definition of having wise children? Those who understand how God works. Perfect. I could not have said it better. Exactly the point. Meaning when a person is careful with Shabbos and is careful with Hanukkah, that means, I mean the lights, so that means that he is very concerned about these two areas. And these two areas form our full knowledge of God. And that's ultimately what all learning is about, is to come to appreciation of God. We should know he's a creator and understand also how he is involved in our lives in when he suspends laws of nature and creates a miracle. So if a person is careful in these two areas, that, I don't know if it's a 100% foolproof guarantee. I mean, a lot of times the rabbis will make a statement, they're just talking about the normal state of affairs. I mean, in a regular case, if you see somebody who's careful with these lights on both Shabbos and Hanukkah, then you're going to see that they'll have wise children. And actually the Gemara goes on and gives about two or three cases that rabbis were talking, and they said, I saw certain wise people, and then I passed by their houses of their parents, and I saw that they were always very careful with the lights. So the Gemara actually follows up and substantiates this statement of Rav Huna, that it actually is so. Ina, what do you mean reflected in nature and outside of nature? But I would just add also that Hanukkah itself is an act of proclaiming. So that also has to do with teaching. Teaching means where you or somebody wants to proclaim God's wisdom and aspects of God's involvement in our life. So therefore, Shabbos has an additional element that you want to give over, you want to proclaim. It's like teaching. So that's something which is essential to have children that are wise. And by Shabbos, the Rambam says, interesting thing, he says that by lighting, this is in the Hilchos Shabbos, it's the Laws of Shabbos, fifth chapter, the first halacha. He says like this. He says, let me just read it to you. He says, just like by Hanukkah Neros. Interesting. He says, the obligation to light on Shabbos is an obligation. It's not just something you can do if you want. Like, for example, where does it say it? Yeah, like, for example, you don't have to wash your hands to eat bread unless you want to eat bread. So there's no obligation, per se, to wash your hands. It's only if you want bread, then you have to wash your hands. And there's also no obligation to do shechita. You don't have to shecht an animal. It's only if you want to have meat, then you shecht an animal. But he says, the laws of Shabbos, the law of lighting the nair, the candle on Shabbos, is an obligation. Whether you're a woman, whether you're a man. And he says, even if you have nothing to eat, you have to knock on the doors in your town and get enough oil that you can light the nair. Because this is part of the mitzvah of Onig Shabbos, of the enjoyment in Shabbos. And you see, he said the same thing by Hanukkah, that a poor person, doesn't matter, he still has to try to, he has to go to that level and he has to get the money together to buy the oil. So you see, the Rambam equates the two even in terms of how far you have to go to acquire it. All right. Now let's see if we had any of the questions. All right, so you know what? I think at this point it's about 3 o'clock. Let me see if you have any questions. If not, we'll wrap up the class at this point, and we'll pick it up on Sunday at 1:30. So if you have any questions, type them in now. Otherwise, we'll wrap it up and we'll continue on Sunday. Okay, it doesn't look like there's any questions. All right, so let me wish everybody a good Hanukkah, happy Hanukkah. All right, thanks, Alfred. Sunday at 1:30. Yes, we'll definitely have a class. Sunday, 1:30, New York time. You're welcome, Gene. My pleasure. Okay, everybody, have a great day. We're going to sign off at this point. We'll see you on Sunday. Happy Hanukkah to everybody. All right, Brian, bring up that question on Sunday about the Maccabees.